Hello, and welcome to another episode of Rational Actors on Blogging Heads. I'm Kevin Glass, Managing Editor at Town Hall, and today I'm joined by...
I'm Danny Vinnick. I'm a staff writer at The New Republic.
Yeah, thanks for being on here, Danny. I wanted to talk to you about what is... I'm not going to attach a gate to it, but a controversy involving the Congressional Budget Office that you've been following for a long time now, and you had a great piece last week. But basically, there's a showdown over what's called dynamic scoring, with how the CBO, which is supposed to be kind of a neutral arbiter of legislation, and if they'll apply what's called dynamic scoring to their legislation, where they now use static scoring. And I wanted to get your take on this, because actually I think you were a little more charitable to the Republican plan for the CBO than I would be. So I wanted to get your take on what the Republicans are trying to do in implementing what's called dynamic scoring, and why it is or is not a big deal.
Yeah, so right now the Congressional Budget Office, CBO, and another institution called the Joint Committee on Taxation use certain models to figure out how different bills are going to affect revenue and spending estimates for the government. So whenever certain Democrats or certain Republicans put in legislation, CBO will give out scores for them. So they increase the deficit by this much because they're going to be this much more spending and tax cuts are going to be this amount. They use their models to estimate all that. And it sets kind of the guidelines for how DC policymaking works. As you said, they're considered nonpartisan, neutral scorekeepers. And they're really important to the legislative process. If we're doing tax reform and we want it to be deficit neutral, they're the ones that determine whether a plan actually upholds that deficit neutrality. So what Republicans are doing here is introducing dynamic scoring. Basically, the scores right now are under static scoring, which means they don't take into effect macroeconomic effects from the economy. So from a Republican point of view, they think tax cuts will lead to increased economic growth. What they want that economic growth to then be factored into their revenue estimates. So increased economic growth would therefore be increased revenue. Therefore, if you're trying to make revenue neutral tax reform, you need to find less revenue in other places to offset the tax cuts, if that makes sense. And then now we're moving to that level of dynamic scoring, where originally we didn't include those macroeconomic effects. Republicans have long sought to include those. Democrats have long thought they're too uncertain, that it's hard to figure out what exactly it'll be, what models to use, and therefore we should just assume there are zero macroeconomic effects and go forward from there. So there's been a lot of controversy in Capitol Hill recently because now the Republicans have control of the Senate and the House, they can write instructions for the Congressional Budget Office to do this, and that's exactly what they did last week.
Right. I think just one thing you said, I think you're a little too charitable to Democrats when you say that they're uncertain. They think that the dynamic scoring models might be too uncertain to use. I think they're closer to the view that tax cuts have so close to a zero effect on the economy that we might as well not take those macroeconomic effects into account, rather than that more sophisticated view that, well, we're not really sure, we do think that there will be these effects and blah, blah, blah. But I think it's really interesting, like you said, Republicans have been pushing for this for a long time because of those tax effects, those macroeconomic effects of tax cuts. But I think that you're giving them a little too much credit here. I'm not sure that they really comprehend how all of this, you know, might come into play. So take President Obama's community college proposal, right? He might say that the macroeconomic effects of his community college, quote unquote, free community college, would be, you know, a ton more economic growth because more education leads to a more thriving economy. And I think that the dynamic scoring proposal kind of opens that Pandora's box for everything to be scored under this kind of legislation. You know, you might take President Obama's stimulus, which had massive infrastructure investments, and say, well, all of those are going to stimulate this much economic activity in the future. And, you know, the stimulus won't cost $878 billion or however much it was, but, you know, taking that into account, it's only $500 billion. And I think that the Republicans, I don't think that they've really thought all of that through. I think that they see oh, we know that taxes increase economic activity. And you know, that's the most, that's what our brains are kind of thinking along those lines. So this is going to be the biggest effect here. And they're not really taking into account that, you know, these spending proposals are going to have macro, non-zero macroeconomic effects in general. And I don't think that they're really thinking through this whole proposal here. And they might get it they might be able to get these rules implemented, but I think that they might be surprised at what's going to come out of the CBO as a result.
I think that's definitely true. And I mean, I think there's definitely a risk that this is a Pandora's box, that Republicans aren't sure what they're getting into, that they're going to regret this in the future. I mean, one of the things I tried to get across in my article is the uncertainty involved in just in terms of what models CBO uses, and at this point, who the director of CBO is. Remember, Republicans decided not to reappoint Doug Elmendorf, who's been at CBO for the last few years. And so we're waiting to find out who will be the leader of CBO going forward. And that'll have a big impact on what type of models they use and thus what type of estimates they come up with for spending and revenue effects of different policies. So I think it's hard right now to know exactly how worried to be if you're a Democrat or a Republican in terms of how these macroeconomic effects are going to actually be factored in. It could make a really big difference and really change the policy debate in D.C. It's just hard to know for sure right now. And that's one of the things that I caution Democrats from freaking out too much, because we're not sure yet. I mean, they want to talk about voodoo magic and how Republicans are undermining this nonpartisan institution in D.C., and I think that's possible, but I think we need to wait a few weeks and months and kind of see what happens before we know for sure.
Yeah, maybe you've been following this closer than I have. I didn't think that there was anything official out that said that they're not going to reappoint Elmendorf. I thought it was just kind of, they're so non-committal about it that everyone's assuming they're looking for someone else.
I'm pretty sure they've come out and said that they're not going to reappoint him. Or at least they leaked to someone in the media. I think it was Dave Weigel at Bloomberg had it 2 weeks ago, maybe something like that. I'm pretty sure Elmendorf's out.
Right. Because the people I've talked to on Capitol Hill, both in the Republican leadership's offices and Senator Hatch's offices, because Hatch, I don't exactly remember how, but being the pro tempore gives you some kind of advice and consent power with the CBO director. They were very noncommittal to me. But it could be the case that they've been firm that Elmendorf is not coming back. And I think that you're right there, that has huge implications for what all of this dynamic scoring mumbo jumbo is actually going to mean in the end. Because like you said, it depends what models they're going to use. It depends, you know, what if they give a range of estimates here. I'm not sure, and maybe you can answer this. They're not prohibiting static scoring as one estimate to give, are they? Or are they just saying you have to also use dynamic scoring?
Well, when CBO reports a score, they have to report one final score. They already do dynamic scoring models now, so you can kind of look and see how it would work under different assumptions of dynamic scoring. But right now, when they give a model over to Congress and they give an estimate, it's doing static scoring. But as far as I know, if CBO then the new director decide that the best estimates they have are that static scoring is the right way to go, then the same estimates coming over will be using static scoring. This just gives them more leeway to choose what models they think are best over a wide array. And it could be that dynamic scoring is just a static score model is just dynamic scoring with zero macroeconomic effects as an assumption. Mm-hmm. So that could be the dynamic scoring model they choose. We don't know yet, and it's been good to see the Republicans left that open. There were also concerns among the Democratic side that they would just choose to tell the CBO director to use a certain model and rig the debate in a different way. And so that was one of the promising things last week, that it did leave it up to the new director's discretion.
Right. And I think that you're right, that that's a very important factor here, is that if they're not demanding that this model or that model be used, then it means that every time a new Congress comes in, this isn't a giant political fight where they get a new CBO director, they demand that there be a new model used and all of that. But you could have counted me, I think, in the camp, in the reappoint Elmendorf camp, which was a small and unpopular, I think, in conservative circles camp. And I'm one of the people who would say that, you know, if you didn't like the CBO's scores throughout the Obama era, and you know we've seen a whole lot of written about the CBO scores on Obamacare, for example, and on the stimulus, then you have a problem with the rules of the game, not the game itself. Hate the player, not the game. Or don't hate the player, hate the game, right? And because I think, you know, Elmendorf did a pretty solid job under the circumstances. Obviously, he was a Democratic appointee, but, you know, no one really said he's violating any of the rules. He was just operating within the framework of what the CBO is supposed to do. And now the Republicans are saying, well, we need a new framework. And with that new framework, we need a new CBO director. So that's a little more, I think, excusable, but I still would have liked to see, I think it would have been a good opportunity for the new Republican Congress to say, you know, we have had problems with the CBO, but we recognize that it's a structural problem, not a problem of its titular head.
Yeah, I think we'll see going forward who they appoint, if the scores really change that much, and to see how much of a difference it actually makes. My guess is that we're not going to see a huge difference in CBO scores, even if we have similar legislation put forward, because you also have most of CBO staff staying the same. It's not like you change the director and all of a sudden the director forced the CBO staff to change their assumptions and put partisan scores out there.
Right.
These are economists who are career workers at the institution, and they're not just going to throw their economic credentials away because there's a new director. And if that's what Republicans are hoping for, because they could, for appointing a new director, that I just don't see that ever possibly happening. If it did happen, you would probably see an exodus of CBO staff pretty quickly, and it would be readily apparent that this was just kind of a partisan rigging of the game.
That would be dangerous. But what I've actually, I think your article was right on. I think the freak out over this is a little over the top, because I think some of the critics of what Republicans have been doing want to play their politicizing a nonpartisan process card a little too strongly. I asked, you know, just an open question on Twitter at one point, if, you know, appointing Doug Holtz-Aiken, if the Republicans reappointed Doug Holtz-Aiken to the CBO, would that be a quote-unquote politicization of the process? And some people said yes, when he is in fact a former CBO director. And he was actually in the, I think, reappoint Elmendorf camp himself. But, you know, to a certain extent, and we've actually seen, I think, the previous two CBO directors go on to have relatively partisan jobs. Peter Orszag went to Obama's OMB, and Doug Holtz-Aiken runs a, I think, a C3 or a C4, a policy shop here in D.C. that's generally center-right aligned. So we have seen, you know, CBO directors themselves become involved in the partisan process in the past. But that, that hasn't, you know, for any reason, politicized the CBO's nature or reputation, I guess. We don't say, you know, during Holtz-Aiken's tenure at the CBO, it was this relentlessly GOP partisan organization, or same on the other side with Orszag, even though it's kind of clear now that those heads were, you know, generally members of the left or right coalitions in the United States.
Yeah, and I think a big reason for that is Holtz-Eakin, Orszag, anybody else involved with CBO has a great respect for the respect that other people have for CBO. I mean, these people, they don't want to go in and tarnish this nonpartisan institution, these scorekeepers that most people on both sides of the aisle in Washington have pretty good respect for. They really do think they try to put out honest estimates that really try to accurately score these different pieces of legislation. And who wants to be the person who goes in there and just throws that all away in a partisan move that is very, very apparent? It's just hard to imagine that Holtz-Eakin or that or anyone else would choose to do that. At least that's what I have trouble imagining.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest problems that, I mean, and probably the genesis of Elmendorf's departure from CBO now is the, I'm not even remembering his name, the Gruber scandal, Jonathan Gruber, whose model was heavily used by the CBO in some of their economic and coverage estimates of Obamacare. And it was used by, and people are saying, you know, it's Elmendorf's fault and he's this partisan hack because he was associated with Jonathan Gruber and these policy models. When, you know, if you don't really think that the Gruber model of coverage works or not, isn't really related to quote unquote Grubergate and his saying that it's important to trick the American people into passing legislation. And you might want to dive into his actual model and try and find out where he's being dishonest there. But I think that did, at least for me, and looking at other conservative reactions to the Keep Elmendorf camp, that played heavily into people's perceptions of Doug Elmendorf, was saying that he's been tarred by these people who are budget tricksters and fraudsters, and they're pulling the wool over the eyes of the American people. Which may be true and maybe not true, but I didn't really see conservatives upset with the coverage estimates coming out of Obamacare in the first place. They were far more upset with the budgetary impact that it was being claimed to have or not have. And that wasn't, I don't think, all that associated with Gruber's coverage models.
Yeah, I mean, some of the comments Gruber made about how the White House designed the legislation in certain ways to minimize the political fallout, Gruber termed it in much more stark terms with lying to the American people and things like that. But the idea of minimizing political fallout from legislation goes back as far as policymaking exists. You know, you want to spin it in the best light as possible. And there are obviously lines there where you can cross into lying or deceiving people. And I think that becomes a pretty subjective manner. But the fact that the White House used set up legislation in a way that they know how it would be scored, I don't think that necessarily tarnishes Elmendorf's time there or really makes him seem this partisan hack job that just did the White House's bidding or David Gruber's bidding. I mean, this was still using economic models and trying to bait out the estimates as best he could.
Right, yeah. And I would argue, and I wrote a piece kind of along these lines. There were a lot of people upset back in the Obamacare debates. They were upset at Republican attacks on the CBO, and they deemed that kind of a demonization of a nonpartisan institution. And I kind of made the argument that the problem, again, wasn't Jonathan Gruber, wasn't Doug Elmendorf, but it was this kind of the structural rules that the CBO was operating under. And Gruber knew what those rules were, and the White House obviously knew what those rules were. So, you know, they had the plans to not start some of the expensive provisions of Obamacare for 4 years after it was passed, which alters how you scored in a 10-year window. They had, you know, a couple other different provisions that really, they showed a really good understanding of what those rules were. And they knew kind of what the outcome was going to be because of that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really about going to Doug Elmendorf and saying, hey, we need this to look a little cheaper than it's actually going to be. And he would tell them why. They all obviously, you know, Obama had Orszag working in OMB. They knew who to go to get the scores they wanted. And that was, again, a structural problem, not really a problem with the actual people working at CBO or for the most part, the models they were working under.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, the 10-year budget window has always been something that has intrigued me when we score legislation, because, I mean, 10 is a nice number, it's easy to 10 years out, but it's kind of arbitrary in the end. And, right. And everybody, every policymaker at Capitol Hill sets up their policy around it. You know, we use budget games all the time to move the cost away or to kick the can down the road. I mean, it's like the oldest trick in the book for legislators, and it's entirely arbitrary for how many years we have. So we can make it 50 years, and I mean, that would probably make it a lot harder for kicking the can down the road, and it would also make it incredibly hard to score estimates out 45 years from now or something. But the idea that, like, the 10-year budget window, that the White House, that there's any criticism of Elmendorf because the White House used the 10-year budget window for its own political purposes just seems completely off to me.
Right. I wanted to get your take on I want to get your take on how the CBO's scoring process, dynamic scoring, the merits of dynamic scoring in and of itself, right? So you mentioned, you know, Republicans want dynamic scoring because they think that it'll give a lot of their legislation better optics on the budget side. But Democrats are generally against it because everyone's kind of thinking about this in terms of tax cuts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they're against it. They want to keep static scoring. Is the problem then, and this is just my interpretation of the problem, is it that dynamic scoring is uncertain and will result in less reliable projections than static scoring? Or is it that dynamic scoring might be gamed a little too friendly to one or the other side?
So I think for liberals, the worry is that it'll be gamed, that they'll put in unrealistic assumptions, and that it'll choose, you know, that Republicans can find extra hundreds of billions of dollars in a tax reform plan that makes it a lot easier to cut taxes, and eventually down the road we realize that those revenues never turned up and it was just a big tax cut and Democrats are pissed about that. That's a fair worry. I still think that's overwrought because it depends on who the CBO director is, and to play games with that, like the CBO director would really make it a partisan institution, and you'd have the staff departures that I talked about. And it would take a lot more than just Republicans in Congress and instructing CBO to use dynamic scoring. On the other hand, the idea that there's great uncertainty around this, I think, does hold a lot of weight. I talked to Peter Orzech for my article, and he told me, yeah, on a theoretical basis, dynamic scoring makes total sense. It's like there's no argument against doing it. Of course, you want to know how policy affects the economy and then how the economy will affect revenue and spending estimates. But he said that's really, really hard to do, to use models and to factor in assumptions and to decipher those estimates. It's just not something that we really are capable of doing with any accuracy whatsoever. And as you start adding more assumptions to that model, it becomes more and more uncertain. And it's really tough to know where that actual accurate estimate lies. So take, for example, last year, Dave Camp, who was the former chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, he released his own tax reform plan. Now, when CBO actually scored it, it was used as static score because that was the instructions at the time, so there was assumed to be no revenue for macroeconomic effects. But the Joint Committee on Taxation, which did the revenue estimates, also released 8 other estimates for what the macroeconomic effects would be. And they ranged from an increase of $50 billion in additional revenue from economic growth over the next 10 years to an additional $700 billion, which is just a gigantic range. And $50 billion is basically a rounding error compared to how much money the U.S. government's going to collect over that 10-year period. It just doesn't really make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But $700 billion really would make a difference. You could make a much, much bigger tax cut if you had an extra $700 billion to play with. And in all of Camp's press releases, he touts a $700 billion figure, which is not surprisingly, why wouldn't you do that as politics after all? And Democrats pointed to the range and said, see, this is why dynamic scoring is really tough to do. And I think that criticism holds some sway.
Right. And obviously, if, you know, let's say that there is one accurate model to do it with, obviously, if it's $50 billion, static scoring is a lot closer to the actual answer than it would be mm-hmm. if the model is 700 billion. If the model they're using, let's say, is 700 billion, and the quote unquote right model to use is the one that shows 50 billion, you're much better off on aggregate using static scoring in that case.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right, and that once you get into the spending side as well, that's something that a lot of, I would say probably, you know, progressive think tanks and activist organizations, they do a lot of estimates on economic growth from spending, right? You can find all sorts of models that will show you that investing in, you know, infrastructure will yield this amount of economic growth, long-term economic growth. We could say funding universal pre-K will result in this X amount of economic growth as well. But if you ask any Republican about that, they'll say either that that's just bunk, it's garbage, and it's not true. Or they'll say, you know, we really don't know there, and they'll play the uncertainty card just like Democrats would play the uncertainty card when it comes to taxes. They'll say, you know, we might think that that might work, but we're not really sure, and why should we invest all this money at the national level for something that would be uncertain returns, and blah, 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 blah. So I think that really dynamic scoring has become a really partisan issue when it could potentially be played by both sides here.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I mean, I think part of the reason, I mean, you do hear the organization talk about it more, but I mean, they really haven't wanted to implement it for fears of what it would do on the tax cut side. Mm-hmm. And I mean, interesting things are like universal pre-K, for instance. It's hard to see how dynamic scoring would benefit that much because the benefits of universal pre-K don't turn up for years and years when those kids...
They don't fit into the 10-year budget window.
Exactly, yeah. So it wouldn't really help Democrats that much to implement it because if somehow universal pre-K would increase economic growth a ton and bring in all this additional revenue, well, that's going to happen like 2030 and beyond or something, and
right.
Democrats don't get any benefit from it. And I think you get that with a lot of policies of spending things, more infrastructure takes a while to kick in, the growth to get the extra growth, to get the extra revenue versus tax cuts can probably move in a little bit faster fashion, I would say.
That's true. I hadn't really thought of it that way, and that we can say, let's undertake, you know, a nationwide big dig, and that means spending all this money right now for benefits that don't show up for another, like, 5 or 6 years at best. So I guess if you flip it that way, dynamic scoring for progressive policies is large spending now, some growth later, and Republicans would be, you know, tax cuts now, but also economic growth starts theoretically this year or next tax year or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you think is going to be the outcome of all of this? I mean, so let's say, and I don't know if you've heard about who might be some names that Republicans are kicking around, but let's say they get a budget director who is generally amenable to Republicans, but also doesn't result in the massive staff departures that you said a worst case scenario would encompass. What do you think kind of the end result is going to be? Do you think that dynamic scoring is going to turn out to be kind of a relative non-factor, in that we might get a Republican-friendly CBO director who implements dynamic scoring, who's taking that $50 billion number instead of the $700 billion number for a camp plan, or is it going to be something that does actually make a fairly large difference when we get to these final CBO numbers?
Yeah, my gut instinct is it won't make a big difference. Just from talking to people, these models are tough to predict, I think. You'll see a director err on the side of caution in terms of making massive predictions. There's always the risk that someone comes in there and uses a model that really, really favors Republicans. And then that's the result that really concerns me and a lot of other liberals, because if the CBO loses its credibility, it really, really quickly becomes a mess to make policy. You have Democrats and Republicans that would each use their own preferred method or model to get their policy estimates for how different legislation affects the budget, and then it's really, really tough to convince people what's right. I mean, you're just going to have more partisan bickering with each side having their own numbers and just making it harder to legislate. And I think that's like down the line worst case outcome. But I mean, I think there are like 10 steps in between that happening, and each one I think is unlikely to happen, where you have to appoint someone at CBO who's willing to take a pretty partisan line. You have to either get convince the staff to stay and, you know, worry that and somehow convince them to use these more partisan models, or get new staff and not have there be a really big political backlash that forced you to undo those changes. There's just a lot of things that have to happen before Democrats should really, really panic that we've lost CBO and the Joint Committee on Taxation as these nonpartisan scorekeepers.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess like a nightmare scenario for you would be they get the Chamber of Commerce's head economist to lead the CBO, and he brings over all the economists from the Chamber of Commerce or something like that when all the CBO staff leaves. I would say to a certain extent, we already have a scenario where politicians are waving their, quote-unquote, waving their own numbers. You know, during the Obama era, obviously, Republicans would go down to the Senate floor and give speeches and wave around you know, heritage policy papers saying it won't cover this many people, it'll cost this much more, and here's, you know, why the 10-year budget window is a farce, and here's the true 10-year cost, and blah, 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 blah. And so we do kind of, and Democrats obviously would either wave around the CBO numbers, or they would find, you know, a Center for American Progress report. So we kind of have a situation, I would say, where we have, and I actually like the kind of the equilibrium, where we have both right and left policy shops producing their own numbers right now, with the CBO and the JCT being a kind of counterweight balance in the middle. But obviously with the assumption, I would argue, that the party in power, the party making the legislation, is really good at gaming CBO numbers, so they can get the outcomes that are more favorable to them in the first place, and then also have policy shops running their own numbers as well. And I would say the equilibrium we're at is pretty good right now. It just means that the party proposing legislation and getting scores from the CBO is really good at knowing the rules of the game and maybe being able to get numbers a little more favorable than in a completely nonpartisan environment.
Yeah, I think the worry is that CBO and JCT don't become this middle ground, even if it moves to one side or a little bit. As you said, it is a nice balance right now, and if all of a sudden it leans heavily one way or the other, that can become a pretty big issue. I think the other place this can become a big issue is how the media covers it. I mean, when media covers legislation now, they can reliably look to CBO as a nonpartisan institution to report on how it's going to affect the budget and spending totals over the next 10 years. I mean, if this moves one way or the other, I don't know if you're at the Times or the Post or the Washington Examiner or wherever, how you can just, you can't just go look up a number and be like, this is going to affect the budget by $100 million in the next 10 years. I mean, you can cite Heritage's numbers and you can cite CAP's numbers and tell you, well, it's somewhere in between and there's a huge issue, huge difference, and here's what CBO is, but we don't trust them anymore. And then what does the reader do? The reader throws their hands up and is like, all right, well, it's within this $1 trillion range and I have no idea otherwise. And that's a concern I have, and I haven't thought of how that would be solved.
Right. I'm pessimistic on the fact that on the idea of undecided voters in the first place. So I'm not sure that a CBO number is convincing anyone in our current policy environment. But I do agree that it is a valuable resource to have, both for legislators and for journalists alike. And it is kind of generally helpful. And I would say something that I think has frustrated progressives about the CBO is how they issue long-term budget outlooks that show, you know, massive increases in entitlement spending are going to overwhelm the budget. And, you know, Paul Ryan uses those pretty heavily in some of his presentations and saying that, you know, there's no use for the CBO to be doing some of these activities because we don't know what's going to happen in the future. And it really kind of heavily tilts the game in favor of Republicans who are against all of this spending because it shows that, you know, we have these problems that might not actually be problems right now.
Yeah, I mean, I share some of those concerns, I would say. I mean, I think it's, I like having the estimates to some extent because it's worth knowing how policy is going to affect the budget after 10 years or 20 years. I mean, I think just not taking them too seriously, knowing that these are decades out. I mean, we had a surplus in the early 2000s and the CBO projected it would be okay. And then, you know, we had two wars and major tax cuts and the deficit ballooned and then the financial crisis hit and the stimulus passed and all of a sudden our debt is much, much, much higher than it CBO projected 15 years ago, which is just, it's not CBO's fault, certainly. How could they project wars were coming or the crisis was going to hit or anything like that? It just shows that lots of things happen that are really, really uncertain. And if we put too much faith, what, you know, spending and revenue are going to be 45 years from now, it would be crazy to think that CBO can forecast these with any type of certainty whatsoever. At the same time, I think knowing that, like, there's a relative track record that spending is going to rise a decent amount, that entitlement spending is going to go up, and that revenues are going to rise a little bit, but going to stay relative in the, you know, 19% of GDP range is also something worth knowing. And even if you don't put too much faith in the actual certainty around the numbers. At least you know the trends relatively. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's, I think, about all the time we have for today. Thanks a lot for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. And I'll see everyone next time on another episode of Rational Actors.